Overnight, global markets have taken a huge hit. London, Paris, Frankfurt.
Did ordinary people cause this financial crisis? I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock, and we have a seasoned professional to help us through this. Daniel Schechter is an award-winning journalist, author, and filmmaker. From his roots as the news dissector at WBCN Radio Boston, through his Emmy Award-winning productions for ABC TV's 2020, Danny has a record of fighting for those hurt by the system. Currently, he's executive editor of MediaChannel.org, with a withering daily blog, I might add, and author of the new book, Plunder. Danny, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, my pleasure.
Well, let's start with plunder. That usually involves violent gangs and innocent victims. Does that apply to America today?
Well, what I've come to see, and what I'm arguing, what I'm making a film about, what I've written a book about, what I write about every day, is the origins of this financial crisis and how crime played a big role in it. In other words, we all know that the housing boom turned into a housing bust, that a lot of money was invested in homes, and people were given mortgages who couldn't afford the mortgages, and there's a tendency, you know, to sort of blame everyone. You know, it was greed on the one hand, and on the other hand, it was irresponsible borrowers, and that sums it all up. Without any real examination of the forces at work here, essentially, that deliberately came up with a scam of trying to get poorer people into homes so that they could then resell the mortgages, knowing full well that these people couldn't afford to sustain those homes and would in fact default on their mortgages, leading to the foreclosure crisis we have in America today, which is due to get worse this month, but it's, you know, around 10 million homes as it is right now. So we have a situation where a scheme developed, you know, using subprime lending, which was actually designed as a reform to help people who weren't able to get access to credit because of predatory practices in the past and because of racial discrimination and like, and to give them an opportunity to get loans. But what happened is that people began to be targeted and driven into subprime lending, which has a very high fee structure. So you're actually paying more for the loan than you would for a regular loan. 50% of the people who actually took out subprime lending loans were eligible for prime loans. So this was that they were steered in this direction by a real estate industry at the local level, which was working in cahoots with big banks and big entities on Wall Street to then resell these mortgages, securitize them, slice and dice them, put them into these packages, or bundles, as they were called, into CDOs, collateralized debt obligations, structured investment vehicles, a lot of things that are kind of complicated, and then resell them overseas often, and they were making billions of dollars. When we find out that there are several hundred thousand people in finance who are now out of work, you get a sense of how big this industry was and how much money it was making. Of course, at a certain point, you know, it's quite clear that when people can't afford to pay back, they're going to start, you know, basically defaulting on their mortgages and defaulting on other loans. And that's what's happened right now. So we have a nation deeply in debt. On the one hand, we have a group of banks and insurance companies and others who have actually become insolvent because of their practices of, you know, taking out, extracting large amounts of money, which then went into high salaries and bonuses and the like. And we have a banking system tottering, which is being revived, if you will, by the federal government, pumping billions of dollars into it, seemingly with no end in sight. And so, you know, you have a lending frozen. Basically, you have banks that are not functioning or functional. You have economic, stagnation. You have unemployment up to potentially 20%, depending on how you count it, whether you count people looking for work, whether you count people who are underemployed as well as people who are unemployed, who are seeking assistance, and what have you. There's a lot of ways to factor, you know, an analysis factor, what factors you put into it. But the net effect is that there's economic stagnation, a very deep recession, if not a depression, although nobody wants to call it a depression. You'll recall that the federal agency responsible for determining whether or not there was a recession only determined officially that there was a recession a year after it began. That's the National Economic Bureau of Research. So, you know, you have a situation here where the information about what's happening, the transparency, the disclosure is hardly adequate. And so we don't even know now how much money has been lost, how much money has been injected into the system, how much money will be injected to try to keep this system afloat. We have a very deep economic problem here, and it's not something that can be solved overnight. In fact, you know, waving a magic wand at it, trying to cut interest rates, trying to put capital into banks, all of these things have been tried and so far have not been successful in getting the economy moving again, getting recovery going. So that's the situation right now. With the United States government now, maybe depending on who you read and who you believe, you know, pumping in or having obligations for $7-some trillion with a potential $150 trillion either lost or at risk. So, you know, this is the numbers here are extraordinary. Nobody really can keep up with it. And, you know, so any sign, any glimmer of hope is sort of seized upon, as President Obama did the other day, to say, oh, there are signs of recovery, things look good, there's an upturn. But the people I'm reading, the financial bloggers, the people who are in the Wall Street world and who are honest about what's going on are extremely pessimistic. That's why the New York Times reported today that a lot of Wall Street people are leaving the industry, becoming entrepreneurs or doing something else, because they don't have much confidence that the system can be saved. That's where we are right now. It's not a pretty picture.
And it's so odd, because every time corporations fire tens of thousands more people, the stock market actually goes up. It seems perverse in that way.
Well, you know, that's true. And part of that is, you know, because there's a cost cutting going on here. You know, this is a system that's totally out of whack. The idea that individual investors control the stock market is an illusion. You know, it's really controlled by the movement of you know, large amounts of investment by various firms, what are called the quants, who are operating on algorithms and formulas, you know, to when to buy and when to sell. And so there's a lot of manipulation within the market that is not really reported on very well. What we hear about is the market went up, the market went down, as if that explains anything. And that's the kind of financial reporting we've gotten. In my book, Plunder, I look at three different phenomena. One, you know, the role of the Wall Street firms. And here I find basically a cartel of people who supposedly were competitive but were actually collaborating with each other, buying off the rating agencies who were certifying these subprime lending bundles as AAA investments, and engaging in, you know, extremely corrupt practices. Then we have the regulators who are not paying attention at all, asleep at the switch. And then we have the media, the third part of my book, which was not warning us about any of this and not covering it, in part because between 2002 and 2007, some $3 billion was put into the internet, into the television and radio, commercials by dodgy lenders and credit card companies. So this reflects a deeper problem in America, which is called financialization. The financial institutions became the dominant players in our economy. So instead of money being used to finance production, finance factories, finance jobs, money was being made on money by investing in paper of various kinds, asset-backed securities, and et cetera and so forth, and all these flim-flam derivative products and credit default swaps and all this other stuff, where they were basically gambling. They had turned the stock market into a casino. And of course, you know, there are people who go to the casino and make money, but most people lose.
Well, you know, the Atlantic Monthly has an article coming out in May called The Quiet Coup, and it's by a former chief economist of the IMF, the Monetary Fund, Simon Johnson. And he says the American financial oligarchy has, in some sense, taken over the U.S. government. What's your take on that?
I think it's right. You know, your listeners might want to check out his work. He has a website called The Baseline Scenario. And in this, he not only has his own essays and articles, but also an explanation of the financial crisis for beginners, baselinescenario.com. It's something worth checking out. I think he's a very thoughtful and writer. He's not compromised. He's not out there trying to sell. He's trying to tell. And that's very different from a lot of the financial journalists who seem to be wearing two hats. On the one hand, in order to get access to Wall Street people and all the rest of it, they often do, you know, fawning portraits of, you know, the CEO of the week kind of thing, and are not critical in their approach. And on the other hand, you have people like Johnson, who's a academic now at MIT and a blogger, and he's doing something excellent, you know, excellent analysis. There's another website your folks might want to check out called Naked Capitalism, another source of analysis and information that's not compromised. The third is something called ml-implode.com, and that's really taking monitoring all the implosions we've had in the financial industry and the real estate industry. So there are sources of information out there, but they don't seem to be working their way into the mainstream media, which was very late to covering this. Everybody's covering it now. They can't ignore it. And, you know, the contradictions are so blatant, you know, with not only the massive bonuses that we've been hearing about and have been triggering so much anger on people's part, but also, you know, all the other, you know, flim-flam fraudulent tactics. I mean, the FBI says mortgage fraud in America is epidemic, okay, pervasive. You know, of course, we know the Bernie Madoff story, $65 billion Ponzi scheme by one guy, unbelievable. But there are many, many others who are not only involved with him, but who have yet to be indicted. So, you know, we need a jail out as well as a bailout here.
Well, you know, I read the financial papers or I watch corporate video. There's so little sign of compassion for the millions of lives being wrecked by this fiasco. There's occasionally they go into, you know, a tent city, but it's a kind of voyeurism. Maybe it's even a warning to frighten workers into accepting more pay cuts. I don't know. Do you think that the net is going to do a better job, places like YouTube
and
media channels?
There are some people trying to, but, you know, it's difficult in part, first of all, because of a failure of disclosure and you know, transparency on the part of these firms for the one. Secondly, a lot of journalists, a lot of people, even progressives, are intimidated, you know, by the finance world. They feel like you have to be an expert. You need a PhD in economics to write about it. Otherwise, your credibility can be challenged. They would prefer to just go after bad guys, you know, go after Bill O'Reilly on Fox News, go after George Bush, go after George Bush again, go after George Bush a third time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, that's been characteristic of a lot more individual analysis than institutional analysis, and that's one of the problems we find across the spectrum in, you know, in journalism. As far as, you know, the suffering of people, it's somehow invisible. You know, today, for example, the New York Times reported on page one that states across the country are cutting back on all sorts of help for the most vulnerable people, senior citizens. There's been an epidemic of child abuse that's taking place as parents who are anxious about the loss of their jobs, the loss of their homes, are taking it out on their kids. So you have, this is a social crisis, no longer just a financial crisis. It affects everybody across the spectrum, and it's going to get more serious. And that's what I think we have to really look at and try to respond to. Yesterday in New York and in 60 cities across America, a new force called the New Way Forward emerged. I write about it in my blog on mediachannel.org, the News Dissector blog, about this demonstration that took place yesterday in New York, but it was also taking place in 60 other cities where they're calling for the nationalization of banks. They're challenging the Obama economic policy. They're trying to get it to go deeper and more fundamental in terms of restructuring our economy. In other words, the goal here should not be to pump money in to revive the very economy that was completely corrupt and predatory to begin with. You know, we need more vision here, you know, deeper structural changes, less consolidation of power and fewer hands, which is what we've seen. So yesterday in New York, I mean, it was in pouring rain, but, you know, people turned out apparently as a result of this A New Way Forward website that they've created, 9,000 people signed up in 1 month and took part in protests in 70 cities or 60 cities. In New York, it was pouring in Union Square. I mean, they kept trying to create a dry area by putting up plastic sheets. They kept getting, you know, the plastic sheets just got blown away by the rain. So the whole demonstration moved into the lobby of a nearby bank, the Bank of America. And it was an actual protest inside the bank, you know, by the ATM machines. The police finally came and threw everybody out. But, you know, it was a tremendously spirited thing. And it was really nice to see this because the left, progressive, anti-war, all these other movements have not really understood this crisis. They've been in denial about it. They haven't really challenged the banks. They jump on like whatever's, you know, whatever the Obama administration may be saying or doing, but they don't go beyond it. And I think finally there's a force here, and this guy Simon Johnson, in a baseline scenario, is supporting it, as are many other people, including myself, on MediaChannel.org.
You know, Danny, in a recent business interview here in Canada, the financial analyst Meredith Whitney warned that the next impact on the average person might be just losing their credit cards. And so many families assume that Visa or MasterCard is going to be their real savings account. They'll use it if they get laid off or something, but it may not be there. Do you think the middle class is in for a rude shock when it comes to the way debt is?
I did a film called In Debt We Trust. You can look it up at indebtwetrust.com. This was a film that I started working on in 2005. It came out in 2006, warning of this credit crisis, warning, you know, of the way in which credit cards were transferring wealth from middle class America to the richest institutions in America. And, you know, because we're talking about interest that goes up to 36%, which used to be considered usury until all the laws against usury were abolished by lobbying, after lobbying by the credit card companies and the banks, and of course bankruptcy laws were also made more difficult. So you have a situation where people are dependent on credit cards. 31 million families in America have maxed out on their cards. A lot of people have taken out equity loans, have found that the banks just stopped the line of credit. Boom. Period. It happened to me. It's happened to many other people. No explanation, no discussion. So, you know, the credit card situation, many people have 10 credit cards, you know, or more. This whole situation is being tightened up significantly by the banks. Of course, they're the ones who had been, you know, basically marketing credit cards to people, even people who had been bankrupt. You know, they were getting, you know, solicitations for credit cards and the like. I was just got one for the black card on MasterCard. The black card is like, it costs $500 a year to get it, but you get all these extra perks and free gifts and concierge services and all the rest. It's a real luxury card. You know, I expose this in my film, In Debt We Trust. So, I mean, we all need to do a better job at educating ourselves about what's really going on. You can't just accept, you know, TV pundits or financial channels. You have to try to get diverse information from many sources. I think my book, Plunder, which is available at Amazon.com, is a good introduction, if only because, you know, even though I went to the London School of Economics, I went to the Cornell University School of Labor Relations, I have some economic background here. I did the first story on the SNL crisis on ABC News years ago. I approach this not as an expert, but as an ordinary person, try to explain what's going on in understandable language. And, you know, it also warned about what was coming down. The book came out a week before Lehman Brothers collapsed. You know, now Bloomberg News reported this weekend that there's something called Lehman Shaku, which is a term in Japanese for the Lehman Shock. There's some 460,000 people out of work in Japan alone as a consequence. So, you know, the ripple effect of this is dramatic, and everyone is experiencing it. You know, the problem is that it's a slow motion crisis. As a result, everything doesn't all happen at once, and so people can justify a sense of denial, a sense that, you know, this is not affecting me, I'm okay. But, you know, we're, none of us are okay, because when these big financial institutions go down, they bring a lot down with them.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm trying to learn about finance myself, and I'm looking for those that will impact my listeners the most. Do you have suggestions of where I should be looking as this snowball seems to roll towards
the
flames?
Well, I've given you a couple of news sites of financial analysis, which I think are pretty good. You know, the Naked Capitalism site or the Baseline Scenario site. But, you know, there is no, some people say take your money out of the bank. Some people say don't do that, because what are you going to do with it? You know what I mean? There's a lot of debate about what should be done, what can be done. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not somebody to tell other people what to do with their money. I'm not that good with my own money, to be honest with you, you know. But I do think we have to learn more about this. What we need is more cooperative institutions, you know, credit unions, for example, and barter exchanges, ways to save money, ways to get what we need without becoming mindless consumers and getting deeper in debt. Obviously, people are getting that message. In fact, use of credit cards have gone down, and shopping is going down, and this is having the effect also of making the whole recession worse. So you have Obama caught in the squeeze. On the one hand, he wants to build confidence. He wants to tell people everything's going to be okay. On the other hand, he's trying to tighten the rules and regulations on the financial institutions that caused this crisis, and some of them are pushing back. There was an article over the weekend about, you know, banks who feel that the rules are too strict. You know, in other words, they took all this money from the government, and now the government is saying if you took the money, you can't give out big bonuses, you can't give out outrageous executive compensation. So they're saying, well, that's terrible, because you are imposing, you know, on our freedom. You know, and then you have the right wing in America, which is going ballistic here, believing that socialism has arrived, you know, that Obama has some secret agenda. First it was a Muslim agenda, then it was who knows what, you know, now it's a socialist agenda. And so you have the right wing basically, you know, Obama was saying hope, and they're saying nope. You know, they're saying, no, you know, we're not going to support anything. And, you know, hoping in a sense that the system will collapse, so they can then say, see, I told you so. So we're in a sort of no-win, very polarized environment where, you know, it's pretty scary, actually, because you don't know what's going to happen.
And almost anything could happen. We've been talking with Daniel Schechter, and he's with MediaChannel.org. He's just a really well-known person all over the media and the author of the new book, Plunder. It's obviously need-to-know information.
Let me give my email, if I could, danny@MediaChannel.org, if any of your listeners want to write to me. And, of course, the blog is newsdissector.com. It's available on mediachannel.org as well. And, you know, I'm doing a film on my book, Plunder. Plunder is at amazon.com. So, you know, you can follow up on this, and I'd be happy to hear from any of your listeners who have other questions.
Well, that's just such a generous offer, and I know people will take you up on it. This is Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock, and Danny, thank you so much for your lifetime of contributions.
Thank you very much for having me on.